Welcome to The Kitchen Table, a conversation about faith, music, and culture. Join Shine.fm's ministry director, Brian McIntyre Utter, and his 18-year-old son, Jake, around the table for this week's chat.
Welcome to episode number 19 of The Kitchen Table. We're so glad you're here with us this week. This is going to be a difficult week. I can just say that right off the start, and I'll get to that in a minute. My name's Brian.
And I'm Jake.
We are father and son, and we've been doing this podcast now. Well, this is episode 19, so that tells you we're a weekly podcast and how many episodes we have done now. And I have avoided this faith question. For those that join us, this is how we do it. We talk about a faith question for about 20 minutes or so. Then we dive into some music because we love music. Mm. And then we talk about something that's happening in our culture currently. We have some interesting things coming up in the program. But the faith question this week, I'll be honest with you, and there'll be a lot of disclaimers right here at the front. I'm not a professional anything. I'm not a professional parent. I'm not a pastor. I'm not a theologian. I'm a radio guy. Some would question whether that's professional as well. Lots of disclaimers right off the beginning is the fact that the question this week, it's political in nature, but this is not a political conversation. Mm. Now, you might be listening to this on Shine.fm because it does air on the radio network. We purposefully, as a part of our mission of Shine.fm, we do not talk politics. That's not why you come to Shine.fm. You come for music that speaks life into you, and you come because you hear people encourage you through the things that we share. But we have to address this question, and it's not going to be political, and it is not taking up issues on certain things. But here's the faith question. What are the appropriate ways for a Christian to manage the relationship between politics and faith? We celebrate generational differences. I am Jake's dad. We are two different generations, and we celebrate the differences of generations. And many times we have different opinions based upon the generational differences. Mm-hmm. I want to know, and I'm going to ask you this question specifically, when it comes to politics in our country, how do you feel your generation sees the whole political spectrum?
From my point of view, I haven't really jumped into politics. I just kind of see it as... I see it as a lot of debate for unnecessary reasons.
Okay.
And I think that's, I'm not speaking for all of my generation, but right. I think that's what we do because I haven't registered to vote. I don't know what we're even voting on for this next one that's coming up.
Are you disconnected completely from politics?
I don't have cable anymore, so.
Well, that's probably a good thing.
The only
and most of your generation doesn't have cable.
Yeah. I don't know what we're voting on. I don't really connect with politics.
Do you think it's important for everyone to have an understanding of the political spectrum?
I have an understanding of the political spectrum, and I think that's an important thing. I think we need to understand the basic terms like checks and balance and House and Senate and President and all of those.
You've taken civics class in high school.
Yes.
So you know that stuff.
Yeah, I know. I think we do need to have a brief understanding of what is going on.
You're listening to The Kitchen Table, a father-son show talking about faith, music, and culture. As followers of Christ, and I don't know about you, but this is just my opinion, I am just emotionally exhausted of politics and the way that it is affecting our country. And I think as followers of Christ, we see the Christian culture, if you will, the values that we share, we see it slipping away, we're frustrated, and we don't know what to do. We know that what is currently happening is frustrating and it's not working and they're not solving any problems, they're just arguing. As a follower of Christ, how do we then manage that relationship between our faith walk and politics? Do we just avoid it and take ourselves completely out of it? Or do we jump into it full force? So there's all kinds of questions that we want to get to. This honestly has been the most researched podcast I've prepped for because I don't have the answers and I'm not smart enough to figure this out. And I think many of us are that way. If we had a simple answer to this, we would be saying, let's do this, and we don't. But what we're seeing is an increased polarization in our country. And many times this polarization is leading to paralyzation. We are paralyzed because we don't know what to do. The digital age that we live in is a whole new realm, which has allowed us to disrespect others, thinking there's no consequences to it. Social media has changed that. We share things. We don't know if they're true. We don't fact check them. You make comments about things, and you're just not thinking through it. As Christians, we must resist the temptation to conduct ourselves in sinful ways that do not reflect the love and humility of Christ. Faith is a part of the political polarization. Some of the most inappropriate accusations are hurled by people of faith. So how do we figure this out? So I have a couple different things. Ed Stetzer, who I have a great respect for, currently working at Wheaton College in Illinois, was a part of Lifeway for many years, put out an article. It's actually several years old now and still applies today. Some of the things that I will do when it comes to managing this relationship between faith and politics, always respect the other person. acknowledge the limits of my own understanding and listen patiently, especially when there's a total disagreement with that person. Use precise language that communicates my views without exaggeration. And I think that's a big part of it. Try to understand the experience out of which the other person has arrived at their view. Because let's face it, people live different lives. They have different backgrounds and different experiences. And that affects the way people see things. And we've gotten to a point where we just can't have a conversation without arguing, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Look for mutual areas of agreement. What do we agree on? Because let's face it, we agree on a whole lot more than we disagree on.
But I think we focus on what we disagree on because we want to change their perspective instead of trying to unite and join together. We just focus on the disagreements instead of the agreements.
Well, that's because the disagreements are what people point out.
Yeah.
Even our media. And our media has a huge part to play into this. And we'll get to that here in a little bit when we talk about, again, a topic I talk about quite often on this show is media literacy and how we don't teach our children and how it's not taught in schools about media and how we should process media and how all of media has an opinion and an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Last thing we have to do is we have to pray for the other person and for our other political leaders.
You're listening to The Kitchen Table, a father-son show talking about faith, music, and culture.
Now, there's some things we shouldn't do. You ready for this list?
Hit me with it.
Use inflammatory words or derogatory names. Have an angry tone. Make broad generalizations about individuals or groups. We shouldn't delight in the difficulties that others are facing. We shouldn't assault the character of others or falsely call out their motives. We shouldn't question another person's faith or their patriotism based upon their belief, their views on political issues. And we shouldn't demonize our political adversaries and describe them as the enemy, which we hear quite often.
With the disagreements, and I think we focus on how can I change the other person and make them similar to us. But in some ways, you can't because they've lived different experiences than you. They don't see the same things because they're not you. Everyone sees things in a different way. And so I think we need to understand that.
If you're just joining this faith conversation, this is The Kitchen Table. We discuss a faith question, and this week's faith question is, what are the appropriate ways as a Christian to manage the relationship between politics and faith? And we've avoided this question. It's a tough question. We don't have all the answers for it, but we're trying to get there. We're not going to solve anything in the next few minutes or so.
Yeah.
We just want to give you some pointers on how you can help. The reason we do this show is we want to spark those conversations between parents and their teenagers or young adult children, celebrate the differences of us generationally, but also grow in our faith. So here's some things that we need to remember about politics. Both political parties go to church.
Yeah.
There is a thing called the Christian left. There is a thing called the secular right.
Can you define what left and right is?
Well,
I know those are terms that are thrown around, but I don't think I fully understand.
As they are defined that I know, the left lean more towards the progressive side of things, progressive thinking, whereas the right leans more to the conservative side of things.
Okay.
I don't want to get into political issues.
Yeah.
That's not what this is about.
I didn't want you to throw out a term and some people didn't know what it meant.
Party lines are drawn in chalk and they're not hard to cross. The church must engage in politics, but it must not be defined by arbitrary lines in politics. Another thing that we have to remember, political talk radio and cable news only want ratings. Now, I've talked in this program about media literacy and how it is not discussed or talked about much in this country. All media has an agenda. They want to communicate something. We've moved away from true journalism to opinion journalism, and we have crafted news channels based upon which segment of our country political leanings are. Mm. Certain news channels lean left. Certain news channels lean right. They do that for ratings.
It's like they have a deeper meaning.
They're just trying to get ratings.
Yeah.
They're trying to make money. That's all they're doing. If we give our favorite political ideologues more time than we're giving Jesus, we're following the wrong master. It is up to us to be good stewards of information, fact-checking for ourselves, following the politics of Jesus Christ and not a political party.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know there's going to be people listening. They're going to totally disagree with me. I understand that. We're not trying to solve problems here. We're just trying to have an open and honest dialogue. Here's another thing we need to remember. Those who argue over politics don't love our country more than others. They just love to argue more.
Mm.
Strife and quarreling are symptoms of a weak faith. Read Proverbs 10:12. Read 2 Timothy 2:23-25. Read James 4:1. There is a word in Scripture. The Lord detests this. He hates quarreling. He hates strife. We need to rise above as followers of Christ and learn to love our neighbors the way God commanded us to love them. He doesn't qualify who we're supposed to love. He doesn't say, you need to love this certain neighbor that believes this certain way, and you need to love this neighbor that believes this way, which is the way you believe. He says, love your neighbor, period. And honestly, it's hard to do. It is. But it also says, love your enemy.
Thank you for listening to The Kitchen Table, a father-son show talking about faith, music, and culture.
Another thing we need to remember about politics is thinking that our political platform is unflawed. That's a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Social policies of a particular party were constructed by imperfect politicians, and they're usually fueled by ambition. And they change. Every 4 years, the party adopts a current or updated platform as their, you know, way of seeing things. And then every 4 years, that platform evolves to meet other needs as things change. And when you look at our political parties, what they stood for 10 years ago has shifted quite a bit from what they stand for today. So we need to know when to change our views to meet a changing culture and when to stand by them.
Mm.
Our views must be based in the gospel of Jesus Christ.
It's like a lens. With my social work class, I'm a social work major. If you're new to the show, we talk about lenses.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since that happened, it's a very good describing way of looking at it. Use the lens. You have a different lens than I do.
Everyone does, based on your background.
Yeah.
Scripture tells us that we are to pray for our governing leaders. 2 Timothy 2, 1 through 4. We're to respect those in authority. Romans 13, 1 through 7. Translation, if you're mocking your government leader on Facebook, the Holy Spirit is grieved.
Mm.
God commands us to pray for our leaders, for their wisdom, for their hearts, for them to be led to Him. And that does not matter if the current leader is from your particular political leaning. You pray for your leader, no matter who that is. Also, don't be paranoid. This country is not going to be destroyed if your candidate loses. 2 Timothy 1:7 says, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. If we're a church that believes that God is in control, we have to believe that He is the one in control of the end times. We also need to stop saying, this is the most important election in the history of our nation. It's not. The most important election in the history of our nation was when Abraham Lincoln was elected president. Before that, we thought it was okay to own people. That election mattered. Now, every generation thinks they're living in the most important moment in history. We're not. Our parents were not. Our children probably won't be. And you know what? That's okay.
Mm.
I want to just reinstate, because I know this is a very difficult faith question, and there's not an easy answer for this, and not many people are probably going to disagree, but we're just emotionally exhausted as followers of Christ when we look at our current culture and the state that we are in, and we don't have the answers. There was an article that came out that really... It was a study, I don't know if it was a research project called Hidden Tribes. Mm. It's a study of America's polarized landscape. And what I found fascinating by this, because they looked at all the different tribes within the polarization, and they realized that there's 2/3 of Americans, 67% of Americans, that are in what is called the exhausted majority. We're in the middle. And we're not on the polar opposites.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that get all the press in the media because, let's face it, that's sensationalism. They are the ones that are getting the ratings. They're the ones that are driving people and making money. Those media companies are just raking it in because of that. But then there's the rest of us, the 67% of this exhausted majority in the middle that are just kind of, we're just kind of fed up.
Yeah.
We share a sense of fatigue with our polarized national conversation, a willingness to be flexible in our political viewpoints, and a lack of voice in the national conversation.
You're listening to The Kitchen Table, a father-son show talking about faith, music, and culture.
Again, I don't have the answer for this, but I want to point out as the ultimate answer that I could find. In the example of someone who dealt in the world of politics, he had his foot in politics, but more important in his life was faith. And that was Dr. Billy Graham.
Mm.
In 2005, he said, I'm just going to preach the gospel and I'm not going to get off on all these hot button issues. If I get off on these other subjects, it divides the audience on an issue that is not the issue I'm promoting. I'm just promoting the gospel. Now, you have to remember, he knew 12 presidents during his ministry. Political party did not matter. He wanted to be remembered more importantly for his deep faith and moral conviction than his political clout. In 1987, he said this, "I'm trying to stay out of it and just keep preaching the gospel because there's nothing coming out of Washington or any of those places that's going to save the world or transform men and women than Christ. It's only Christ." President Bill Clinton said this about Billy Graham. "When he prays with you in the Oval Office or upstairs in the White House, you feel like he is praying for you and not just the president." Billy Graham said, "People in power have spiritual and personal needs like everyone else, and often they have no one to talk to." So again, we go back to those things of what we should do, which is pray for our political leaders.
Yeah.
Another thought I read on Billy Graham that I thought really summarized it well. Throughout his life, it was obvious he wanted the focus to be not on himself, but on one thing, the cross of Jesus Christ. Managing the relationship between faith and politics is difficult. I don't have all the answers, but there are some good things to remember that we shared today. There's some things that we should avoid and realize that what will make a difference in our country, even in the political scope of things, because they talk about the separation of church and state, but the fact of the matter is Jesus Christ is the only answer. And we start loving people, and when we start listening and having conversations rather than arguments, I think we'll truly see a difference in this country.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating. For your generation, I don't know how you figure it out. I don't have an answer.
I think our generation is, I think we're trying to do a change. As you say a lot when you are speaking to young people really want to have a voice, to be heard. And I think that's starting to show. I think with everything that's been going on with the school shootings and just everything, young people are really standing up to try and make a change.
I pray for your generation and I hope they can figure it out better than the rest of us. I really do. So again, difficult question, no easy answers at all. Don't know if it helped this discussion or not. We certainly hope it does. And if you disagree with us, we're sorry. We love you. You're still loved. God still loves you.
Amen.
And that's what it's all about. So that closes out the faith question. And we're going to move into a segment we call Music Matters. All right, now I can breathe a little easier after that faith discussion. Wow. And talk about fun stuff, which is music.
Yeah.
We do this every show. We have a segment we call Music Matters. And the way it works is I bring a new song that I hopefully think Jake doesn't know and surprise him with. And he does the same for me, brings it back to me. Mm-hmm. And then I'll pick what we call an oldie but goldie. We'll go back in time and pick a classic. And I like bringing classics back to the new generation so they can figure out that, yeah, there was great stuff back then too. So I have a new song. This is actually a song from, you know, One Sonic Society?
No.
You
never
don't know,
heard of them.
You know some of their songs. You do.
Maybe if you name some.
Yeah. They do a lot of modern worship type stuff. I cannot believe you do not know this band. Wow.
What do they sing?
I don't know specifically.
I've probably played some of their songs.
I'm sure you have. Lots of worship songs. There are a lot of writers and producers that were in other bands several years ago when the modern worship movement started, and they sort of come together, and they don't do a lot of music because they're more studio musicians and writers than anything. But they have a new song out. It's called Love Song, and it features Ellie Limebear, which you have no idea who that is, do you?
No, I do.
You do?
Yes.
Oh, wow. See, I thought I was bringing someone totally new.
I know who that is.
Do you know who her dad is? You
Mr. don't? Mr. Limebear?
No, it's not. Her dad is Martin Smith, lead singer of the band Delirious.
Really?
Yeah. I know something you don't. There you go. Ellie is on this song with One Sonic Society. She is a worship leader and youth pastor in Brighton, United Kingdom, and the daughter of Martin Smith, lead singer of Delirious. And so this is One Sonic Society. This is One Sonic Society featuring Ellie Limebear. It's called Love Song.
I liked it.
Just a great great bunch of guys writing great music, and Ellie's got a great voice.
I always think that a band that comes together with like sound and like programming, I'm not trying to hate, but I think they just make a better song. So my song for the week, everyone knows her, Lauren Daigle. New album, amazing. The song I chose, though, it's kind of special because Lauren Daigle was recently on Ellen. Everyone knows the show Ellen DeGeneres, big show. Lauren Daigle was on there, and she did this song. Lauren Daigle's new album, I can't find a flaw with it.
It's amazing.
There's no songs that like I get bored to listen. I just want to listen to all of them. This song, it's the first song of the album. It is called Still Rolling Stones. It's just about Jesus and how he's still rolling stones away. Your burdens. It's like referencing
being resurrected to new life.
Yeah, and I love it. So here's a little bit of Still Rolling Stones by Lauren Daigle.
It's a great song.
Mm.
And I tell you what, that song, that video has gone viral, of course, from her show. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people out there who have complained about Lauren going on Ellen's show because of Ellen's lifestyle. Lauren's been taking a lot of heat on social media. I hate that.
Yeah.
You know, Lauren gets invited onto a national platform of people that are Christian, because let's face it, the Christians watch that show, and those that aren't Christians, and she is able to sing a song about Jesus and be a shining light on a national platform, and people are going to criticize her for it. I just, we can be so much better than that.
Yeah.
Come on. Love the album. Love that song. So excited for her. Okay, now we're going to go back in time. Oldie but Goldie. Now, typically what happens is, growing up, Jake would always take my iPod, which is loaded full of 80s songs, and listen to it and then be introduced to
things. Striper, Sticks, Aereo Speedwagon, all those.
So this song is actually from 1990.
Oh, so it might have been 9 years before me.
It might have been recorded in 1989, but it was the number 8 song on the radio in 1990 by a singer-songwriter that to this day is still one of my favorites. I think there are very few people who can write like he did. And I say in the past tense because he's passed away. Rich Mullins, amazing guy who was a wordsmith. He could paint a picture of the most beautiful landscape simply using words. And so this song came, was again in the charts in 1990. I just can't say enough about this guy. He died tragically in 1997 in a car accident. We miss him immensely, but the impact he has on many of the artists that exist today, that is his legacy. Because if you talk to lots of artists today, they will say, Rich Mullins. Songs from Rich Mullins influenced me when I was younger. So this song is called While the Nations Rage. It was number 8 in 1990.
I've actually heard of the singer, Rich Mullins, yeah.
Yeah, had a movie made about his life. He was the most difficult person to interview on the radio.
Really?
Yeah. You'd throw him a question, he'd throw a question back at you. Many times he had a big old bushy beard and no shoes. I was excited to be able to see him perform like a year before he passed away one last time. And just, he surrounded himself with people like him who are just creative animals and being able to create amazing music. At the height of his fame, and this is what where I get the most respect for him, at the height of his fame, he walked away, went back to school when he was 40.
Really?
And got a degree in music education. And when he finished his degree, he moved to like New Mexico, Arizona, and he moved into a Native American tribe and taught music to kids.
That's awesome.
So at the height of his fame, he said, hey, I'm going to go do this for a while, guys. He took a salary from his ministry, which was the average salary of an average worker in the United States. He never knew how many albums he sold, how much money that those albums made, concerts, how much money he made. He just got the same amount of money every week, and that's what he lived off of. So just a tremendous amount of respect for that guy. Well, that closes up Music Matters. And now we're going to move into Culture Shock. All right, Culture Shock this week. I don't know if you saw this article, or maybe it was just a statement that came out. If you remember a book that came, I'm not even sure what year the book came out, but it was called,
it came out in my lifetime.
It did come out in your lifetime, called I Kiss Dating Goodbye by a guy named Joshua Harris. That was like the Christian in book at the time. It sold lots of copies. Joshua became famous off of that book. Well, he actually came out this week saying that they're going to stop publication on that book because he didn't agree with everything in the book anymore, which I thought was rather interesting. So I wanted to read a little bit of his statement here, and then we can discuss it, okay? He says, while I stand by my book's call to sincerely love others, my thinking was changed significantly in the past 20 years. I no longer agree with its central idea that dating should be avoided. I now think dating can be a healthy part of a person's developing relationally and learning the qualities that matter most in a partner. So he recommends a couple of books instead of his book. Boundaries in Dating by Dr. Henry Cloud and True Love Dates by Deborah Filetta. So this encourages healthy dating. He says, in an effort to set a high standard, the book emphasizes practices, not dating, not kissing before marriage, and concepts, giving your heart away, that are not in the Bible. In trying to warn people of the potential pitfalls of dating, he instilled fear for some, fear of making mistakes or having their heart broken. So he's basically said he's discontinued the publication of it.
Really?
Talked to the publisher and said, hey, guys, I'm going to just stop doing it. So it's interesting. I want to know your take on this.
You wanted me to read this book when I was...
It was the in book 20 years ago.
Yeah, I know. I completely agree with what he says about his book. I've had a couple of relationships. I think it's a good thing because it teaches character. It teaches what you want in a relationship, what you want for your future spouse, what you were looking for in a spouse of yours. In the character aspect, again, it teaches how to respect others.
Okay.
Because in a relationship, like, you have to give and receive. You have to give love and receive love at the same time. It's a good thing to learn while you're young because it's really hard to learn when you're older. I'm a giver and I've struggled with receiving. I don't like to receive. I like to give. And that's a big thing that I work on.
The whole premise of the book is, why are we going to put ourselves under the pressure, especially as teenagers, of dating when we're not ready for marriage? And so rather than put ourselves in situations that could be awkward and we could slip up, right? Let's just avoid it altogether, which I don't think is, he's saying now, it's not healthy either in relationships. Because I've already said to you, if you're not ready to get married, why start a relationship?
Yeah.
But I see no problem with going out on dates as friends, trying to avoid the situations by going out with groups. Then it's not one-on-one and can get awkward and that kind of thing, because maybe you're not ready for that. I think there's a healthy way of doing dating.
Yeah.
Going on dates. And then there's also a healthy way of beginning relationships, because relationships, that's something beyond just going on a date with a friend.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be interesting to see the thoughts that are coming out of this now.
I understand what you were going with, the original intention of not putting yourself in awkward situations.
That's Culture Shock for this week. Thank you so much for hanging out with us this week. It's been a difficult program. Again, we're not trying to offend anybody. We're trying to just figure this thing out.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have all the answers sometimes. And we shared some thoughts with you that will get you thinking, just having those conversations with your kids. If you want to share a faith question or a comment with us, the best place to do that is on the Kitchen Table group. It's on the Shine.fm Facebook page. It's a group. Just ask to be in the group. We'll let you in, of course, and we can continue the conversation there. You can also reach out to us through that Facebook group, and we'd love to just communicate with you, get your thoughts on the program, and again, just continue this conversation together.
I hope you have a great week, y'all. Hope you enjoyed the episode. We will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Kitchen Table on the Shine.fm Podcast Network from Olivet Nazarene University. Be sure to subscribe for more content delivered each week on faith, music, and culture.